Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yuma Daf Yud Tes. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur at the top line of Daf Yud Tes. Truth be told, at the end of our last shiur, we actually read the first three words of this omid, but to have a sense of wholeness and completion, the first three words, Tono Lelamdo Chafino, was a reference to that which had been stated in the Mishnah at the bottom of Yud Chesomid Beis. The Zikne Beis Din gave over, or handed over, so to speak, the Kohen Gadol to the Zikne Kahuna, and they were brought to the, they went to the Lishkas Beis Avtinas. The Mishnah said, Ve'elu, the Beis Avtinas, they brought him to that particular chamber. That chamber was, as the Gemara here says, that which they brought him to the Beis Avtinas, Lelamdo Chafino, to teach him Chafino. Now Chafino has to do with the Ktores. The Beis Avtinas was the family that was charged with the preparation of the Ktores, and the Ktores process or ceremony was a very difficult one to execute because it involved the Kohen Gadol bringing two pans into the Kodesh HaKodesh, one pan containing coals, the other pan containing the incense, and the quantity in the bowl containing the incense was two hands full. So the Kohen Gadol is all alone in the Kodesh HaKodeshim, and it was an art form to get the contents of the pan holding the containing the Ktores back into his hands, because the placing of the incense on the coals had to be from the Kohen Gadol's hands, and he couldn't have any, even a grain of the Ktores fall onto the floor. So imagine maneuvering this bowl or pan with your hands and flipping it over, getting the entire contents of the bowl containing the incense into your cupped hands, two hands full. As we said, the Gemara will discuss this later in the Masichta, but it was a very difficult task. Hence, he needed training for that. That's why he was brought to the Beis Avtinas, as the Mishnah mentioned. Now, we continue with the Gemara, the new Gemara, and we have a topic, heading, and structural note on the side of the Gemara, where we've featured a diamond, and if you scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll see where they appear. Shnei l'shochois hoyu l'kohen gadol. There were two chambers that were designated for the Kohen Gadol. Echad b'tzofen v'echad b'dorom. One was in the northern part of the courtyard of the Azora, and the other was in the southern part of the courtyard. Matras ha-Gemara l'varer, the point of this Gemara, will be to clarify which one was the one in the north and which one was in the south. The Gemara points out that they were known, the two chambers' names were, part one was the Lishkas Parhedrin and the other was the Lishkas Beis Avtinas. These two names should be familiar to us. We've had at the beginning of Maseches Yuma a reference already to the Lishkas Parhedrin, and that is where the Kohen Gadol spent his 7 days leading up till Yom Kippur, the Yemei Prisha, and he happened to have slept there in that Lishkas Parhedrin. Lishkas Beis Avtinas, we just mentioned, that was the place that he learned how to do the Chafino, and that learning process took place, as we said, before Yom Kippur. As you can see, just a word or two about the structure of the Gemara. As you can see, we have to the immediate left-hand side of the text, Rav Papa encircled, a descending dashed line showing you that all of this is Rav Popa speaking. Big, big piece of Gemara. There is a very long section of the Gemara that you'll see is bracketed off, and the purpose of those brackets will be initially to skip the contents of the brackets, and in order to maintain the essence or the central point of Rav Popa's discussion here. And hopefully things will become much clearer as we go into the Gemara. So at the top line, Omar Rav Popa, Shtei L'shachos Hoyu Lo L'Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol had two chambers in the Azora. Achas Lishkas Parhedrin, one was known as the Parhedrin chamber, which is the chamber in which he slept, and the Achas Lishkas Beis Avtinas, and the other was that particular chamber where he learned how to do the Chafina. Achas Batsafon V'Achas Badoram. One was in the northern section of the Azora, and the other in the southern. In other words, these chambers were built into the walls of the Azora. So one was in the northern wall, and the other the southern wall. Notice the big skip, and we continue after the brackets. We have a bracket length indicator, so use it. So V'lo Yodano E Lishkas Parhedrin Batsafon Lishkas Beis Avtinas Badoram. I don't know if the Parhedrin was in the north and the Beis Avtinas in the south, or the other way around. Olishkas Beis Avtinas Mitzafon V'lishkas Parhedrin Badorom. So I don't know which was where. Notice, there's another long marking, but all of this is part of Rav Papa's speaking. There's a long point, and the Gemara goes on to say, Umistabro, this is Rav Papa continuing, Umistabro D'lishkas Parhedrin Badorom Havoi. He makes a point that it was most likely that the sleeping chamber was in the southern part of the base Amigdash, of the Azora. And why was that? So the Gemara will explain why. However, that's not the end of the story. You notice there's a long point, and then following that, the Gemara there's a Dalid, also a long marking. It's not that long, but the Dalid that you see to the side of the Gemara takes the Dechia, where the Gemara says that the point that Rav Papa tried to make is not convincing. So, all said, what do we see here? This whole Amid Gemara is dedicated to basically one idea. Rav Papa's doubt concerning it's an issue of location. Parhedrin and Beis Avtinas, which was located where? And Rav Papa's suggestion of what would be most likely, and then the Gemara is saying, no, we're not convinced. What about this long bracketed section? So the whole purpose of the bracketed section, or that which is contained within the brackets, is the source material establishing that the Kohen Gadol had two chambers. And as far as what's really necessary for establishing that, you need very little of the Gemara text to do that, to accomplish that. And what we'll try to do with our markings is emphasize to show you that. The first diamond indicates Achas B'Safon, means in this section, till the next diamond, all that we have to establish is that the Kohen Gadol had a chamber in the northern wall of the Azora. Now, when you look at the source, use the markings. Don't just read the Gemara line by line, but look at the markings. You notice there's a dashed underlining that says where it says Shebat Safon. There Gimel Shebat Safon. There were three chambers that existed in the northern part of the Azora. And then there's a dot underline on the first wide line, Lishkas Kohen Gadol Hoisa. All you have to do then is you realize that in this source there was a reference to Safon, and there was a Lishkas Kohen Gadol. There was a chamber of the Kohen Gadol. So that demonstrates that there was a Kohen Gadol chamber in the north. Doesn't say which one it was, but that there was one in the north. The next diamond, you see Achas Badorom. Again, use the markings. So there's a couple of dashed underlining. The dashed underlining will have significance as we go on in the Gemara itself. However, this source makes reference to at the very end of the source. You see, it says Bitzad Lishkos Oisa dot underline. That shows us that there was a chamber of the Kohen Gadol. And if you connect all the dashed underlining that you see here, just the words that we dashed underline, you'll notice. We dashed on a Shebedorom. We've made reference to Shar Hamayim. In other words, there was something called it's called Watergate. That might have some additional meaning for some of you listeners, but we're sticking to the Beis Hamikdash for right now. There was a Shar Hamayim, a water gate, in the southern side of the Azara, and it's called Shar Hamayim because there was a mikveh that was built as part of that particular gate, and it was in the south, Storom, Shar Hamayim. And then, if you go to the bottom line of the source, it says, "Chutz mizu shoisa b'choil al gabi shar hamayim ubitzad l'shkosu hoisa," so that the Kohen Gadol chamber was next to the shar hamayim. And where was the shar hamayim? It was in the south. So that you see, from this whole long section of Gemara, all you need is just that which we dashed, underline, and dot underline. That's it. The rest is brought in because the Gemara many times quotes entire sources. But as far as understanding our sugya, you don't really need all the other information. So in light of that, we don't feel too pressured into explaining all the details of the sources. They are Mishnayos that you'll find in Maseches Nidos. And we highly recommend those who are interested in the details to look up the Mishnayos and learn them with a commentary that will suffice for each one's own understanding. So we start now, after having heard Rav Popa tell us that the Kohen Gadol had two chambers. One was the Lishkas Beis Avtinas, the other one was called Lishkas Parhedrin. One was in the north and one was in the south. And we see now the bracketed section. Achaz Bedorim. Here we are to establish that the Kohen Gadol had a chamber in the northern wall of the Azorah. Disnan. There were six chambers in the Azorah, Gimel Betzofen, Gimel Bedorim. Three in the north and three in the south. Shebedorim. In the south, they were known as, these are their names, Lishkas HaMelech, Lishkas HaParva, Lishkas HaMadichen. And the Mishnah explains, Lishkas HaMelech, the salt chamber, Shisham Hoyu Noisne Melech LeKorban, that was where they stored the salt used for the sacrifices. Every sacrifice needed to have salt accompanying it. Lishkas HaParva, Shisham Hoyu Molchim Oroiz Kochim, that was a chamber in which the oros, the skins of sacrifices, were salted. V'algaga hoisa beis tvila l'kohen gadol b'yom hakipurim. And on the roof of this particular chamber, there was a mikveh for the Kohen Gadol's Yom Kippur immersions. And that is a separate topic, the Yom Kippur immersions, later in the Masechta. Number three, Lishkas HaMadichin, that Lishka was Shom Hoyu Madichin Kirvei Kochim. That was a chamber in which the innards of sacrifices were rinsed off. The innards contain all kinds of debris that must be rinsed off. Umisham Mesiba Oilo Legag Beis HaParva. And from the Lishkas HaMadichin, there was a path, or a spiral staircase, if you will, that you would climb there to the roof of the Beis HaParva. And we mentioned on that roof was where the Kohen Gadol's Yom Kippur Tevila Mikveh was located. Gimel Shibet Safon. Now the three chambers in the northern part of the Azorah, they were their names, and later the explanation of them. Number one, Lishkas Ho'etz, two, Lishkas HaGoyla, and three, Lishkas HaGozes. Lishkas Ho'etz, Omer Rabbi Elazar ben Yankov, Shochachti, Mahu Yisum Meshameshes. He says, well, I forgot what that was used for. Abba Shol Omer, Lishkas Kohen Gadol Hoysa, Achorei Shtehen. There was a chamber of the Kohen Gadol in back of these two, the Gag Shloshton Shove, and the roof of all three chambers was of the same level. Lishkas Hagoyla, that chamber was Shom Hoya Bor Hagoyla. There was a pit there. The Hagagol Nosun Olov, there was a wheel pulley system in order to draw water from this pit. Umisham Maspikin Mayim L'chol Azora. That was a source of water for the Azora. Number three, Lishkas HaGozes. Sham Hoya has in the Lishkas of Gozis, which was in the northern part of the Azora, Hoya Sanhedrin Shel Yisrael Yosheves Vedona Es Hakehanim. It was the Sanhedrin, the high court, sat there and made judgments that were relevant also to the Kohanim. Now, the Sanhedrin was famous for being the highest court in the land of Israel, but in addition to its general judiciary role, it also has relevance to judging the Kohanim. And this has to do with determining which Kohanim were fit for serving and which were not. Any Kohen was found to have some type of disqualifying factor or characteristic, would clothe himself with black and cloak himself in black, and v'yotzev alechlo, and depart. A Kohen that there was not found any disqualifying factor, so he would be fit for serving. He would wear the dress in white and cloak himself in white and go in to serve with the rest of the Kohanim. Once again, this source contains what's immediately relevant to us is the reference to the tsafon, which was dashed underlined, and the dot underlined Lishkas Kohen Gadol Hoysa. There was a Kohen Gadol chamber in the north. Achas Bedoram Desnan. And we have another source indicating that the Kohen Gadol had a chamber in the southern wall of the Azora. Desnan Shivas Shiva Shorim Hoyu Bazora. The Azor had seven gates, Gimel B'Tzafon, Gimel B'Dorom, three in the north, three in the south, V'Achad B'Mizrach, and one in the east. Shebet Dorom, Shar HaDeleka. Sheni Lo, Shar HaKorbot. Shlishi Lo, Shar HaMayim. So there were three gates in the south. They were known as Shar HaDeleka. The second one was Shar HaKorbon, and the third was Shar HaMayim. And we dashed underline Shar HaMayim, as we indicated earlier, that is going to be a reference point for the Kohen Gadol chamber. Sheba Mizrach. Now, these are less significant because we're dealing with the other directions, the other sides of the Azora, but as we said, we can de-emphasize that for now. Sheba Mizrach, Shar Nikanor, Ushtei Lishochos Hoyu Sham. The Nikanor gate was located in the east, and there were two chambers there. Achas b'yamino v'achas b'smolo, one was to the right, the other to the left of the gate. Achas lishkas pinchas hamalbish, v'achas lishkas oisei chavitin. The one was known as the chamber of Pinchas HaMalbesh, and the other was the Lishka in which the Chavitin were prepared. Chavitin was a meal offering. Shebet Safon, Shar HaNitzotz, Ukeminach Sadra Hoya. In the north, there was a gate known as Shar HaNitzotz, and it was built like an Achsadra. Achsadra is a type of open porch, open chamber open with a roof with some supported by columns. The Aliyah Benuya Lo Al Gabov, and there was a second story built above this shar, above this gate. Vesham Kohanim Shomrim Milamalovim Milamata, and there were Kohanim that were posted as guards above and Levim below. Veshlefnim Hemenu Hachel, and beyond that was the Chel, an area right outside the Azora. Sheni Lo, the next gate, Shar HaKorban. Shlishi Lo, Shar Beis Hamokade. The third gate was known as the Beis Hamokade gate. V'tanya, Chomesh Tfilos V'Azora Kedushin Toivu Kohen Gadol U'Mekadesh Bayom. In the course of Yom Kippur, there are five immersions and 10 Kedushin. Kedushin is where the Kohen Gadol would wash his hands and feet from the Kior. So we have on Yom Kippur there were Chamesh Tvius V'Asor Kedushin Toivo Kohen Gadol U'Mekadesh Bo Bayom V'Kulan B'Kodesh. All of them were done in an area that had Kedushas Azora, had the sanctity of the Azora, Al Gag Beis HaParva, on the Beis HaParva roof, which we made mention of earlier. Chutz mizu shehoisa b'chol al gabi shar hamayim, with the exception of the first immersion that is associated not with Yom Kippur per se, but any Kohen who comes in to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, he has to immerse himself. So that immersion was done as the source says, Al Gabi Sharamayim, it was Bechol, meaning that did not have Kedushas Azora. It didn't have the sanctity of the Azora, as opposed to the other Yom Kippur related immersions. They needed to be in a place of Mokom Kodosh with Azora sanctity. This did not have that level of sanctity. Ubitzad Lishkoso Hoysa, and that was next to his chamber. So we see from here, and Rashi makes that point, we see from here that there was a chamber in this source dealt with the south, because we were just dealing with the Shar Hamayim, and we saw above in this source, just use the markings to navigate, we have dashed underline Shebedorom, and the line under that Shar Hamayim, that was a gate in the south. And we have here the dot underlined at Lishkoso Hoysa, the Kohen Gadol's chamber next to that Shar Hamayim. And now Rav Papa makes his comment. V'lo yadana I lishkas parhedrin betzof of lishkas beis haftinas bedorom. I don't know if the parhedrin, which was where he slept, and we're emphasizing that for distinct purposes, as you'll see shortly. I don't know if his, called the sleeping chamber, was in the north, and the lishkas beis haftinas was bedorom, where he learned the chafina. Oy lishkas beis haftinas batzofon v'lishkas parhedrin bedorom. Umistabra. It's most likely the Lishkas Parhedrin Bedorm Havoy, that the sleeping chamber was in the south, the place that was next to his initial tevila, the morning, the crack of the morning, the first tevila of the day. So what are we trying to do? We're trying to say that we want to have where he would wake up and go immediately into this, he'd be right next to where the morning tevila takes place. Now, my timer, why is it important for the sleeping chamber to be next to where that immersion takes place, where this base hatevila is? So in this long point, he explains why he feels thusly. So the structure of this long point is, first he'll tell you why this makes sense, and then there's a squiggle underlined where you see D.E. Amris. That's where he shows you, if you're not going to say like this, then you'll set up a situation which will be very uncomfortable, very burdensome for the Kohen Gadol. So therefore, it's most likely that the sleeping chamber is in the south, because if you place the sleeping chamber in the north, you're going to create an extra burden for the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, or for the Kohen Gadol. Let's just leave it at that. Not, as you'll see, not necessarily on Yom Kippur. We're talking also about the days before Yom Kippur. So let's see the Gemara. Umestabra delishkas parhedrin bedorim havoy. My time, why is that? The answer is like this. Maktim koi umesach es raglo. If he gets up in the morning, he relieves himself, as most people do when they wake up in the morning. V'tovil, and then he immerses himself. The oziel latsafon. Now, when we say he immerses himself, this is a necessary immersion in the morning. And then he goes, v'oziel latsafon, the gomar chafina. He would then go to the other chamber, the Beis Avtinas chamber, which, if you're saying the sleeping chamber is in the south, so the Avtinas is in the tsafon, and the gomar, he learns chafina. The osi, the Beis HaMikdash. And then he enters the Beis HaMikdash. The ovid avoda, kule yom, and he does all of the Beis HaMikdash activities, which includes things done in the Heichal and things done in the Azora, and he does that all day. Lebahadi Panya, toward the evening, means it's still day, but it's toward the end of the day. Panya is a term reference to the end of the day. Madu Ale, they sprinkle, that's from the May Paraduma, as we learned earlier, that every day he had to be purified with the Mei Paraduma, and we also explained that a person becomes Tomei if he's Torah and he comes into contact with the Mei Paraduma, he becomes Tomei. So they, in fact, the Kohen became Tomei after having done all his day's activities. The Hodar Oziel Ledorom Vetovil then would go back to the south. In other words, he was, in the meantime, he was, let's say, located in the Azara, so he scoots over a little further to the south, where he had that mikveh, and the tovil, he immersed himself to rid himself of the tuma that he just absorbed through the Mei Por Aduma, and then there's immediately the sunset. This all we have learned in previous dapim in our Masechta already, and he v'nayach, and he goes to sleep. He's right there, right next to his sleeping chamber there in the south, which is right next to where he does the tevilah. So all told, if you were to map out, to sketch out his movement, you would discover that it's a type of, he would make it's a circular movement from his day's work. It's a fairly straightforward movement, and starting in the morning in the Dorom, then going all the way across to the Tzafon, then retracing his steps to the Heichal and the Azora, and then going further, a little further more back in that same direction to back to the south. Now, De'i Amris Lishkas Parhedrin Betzafon, however, if you're going to set it up that the Parhedrin, the sleeping chamber, was in the north, you're going to find that there's much more movement on the part of the Kohen Gadol, which is what we said before, is a bit burdensome. And what would happen? So keep track. Maktim Koi Umesach Raglov, according to this approach, he starts off in the north, he slept in the north, gets up in the Maktim Koi, gets up in the morning, Mesach Raglov, relieves himself. Now he needs to do a tevila because he's going to do the day's work in the Beis Hamikdash. The Ozel Ledorom. He now right at the morning, then he has to go all the way across to the Dorom, the Tovil, and then the Gomar Chafina, and then he goes all the way back to the north. So notice he starts off already with an entire a crisscross, or his back and forth, the entire Azorah he has to do right there in the morning. And he goes back to the north for the Chafina, v'osi lebeis hamikdash, v'ovid avoda kuli yom, and then he goes into the Heichal and the rest of the Azorah to do whatever avodas that he's expected to, which we've learned about in the past. Lahadi panya, toward the end of the day, madu alei, he is sprinkled with the Mei Paraduma, v'hodar oziel Ladorom. There he goes to the Shar Hamayim Vitovil and immerses himself. Uboy Mahadu Mezel Litzafon Umeinach. And then after that, he goes all the way back to the north again for the Lishkas Parhetchen, for sleeping. Omi Torach Matruchinon Le Kule Hai. Would it be right to subject him to so much trouble? So once again, if you locate or place the Lishkas Parhetchen, the sleeping chamber, in the south, and you map out his movements, you'll see it's much less than if you place the sleeping chamber in the north, map out his movements, and you'll see that we're causing him to move back and forth much more. The Gemara says, oh, really? Is that what's bothering you, that we're troubling him? Aloma lo machachin lefei. Why shouldn't we trouble him? The tzeduki who lifrosh. If he's a faker, if he's a tzeduki, is not. He's a heretic. So we've seen already before in previous shiurim that there were tzedukim that tried to get into do the avoda because they had their own idea of Yom Kippur, how the Yom Kippur ketores should be done. But if we trouble him and he happens to be a phony, so he'll say, it's not worth it. Be all this burden isn't worth it. Someone is for real, so they'll be able to withstand the trial, the tribulations of all this movement. But if someone's a phony, so this will tire him out, causing him to desist from his attempts. Inami, another explanation for why it's not so bad to trouble him. Shelo tozuach daito alav, to that he should not gain a feeling of haughtiness. In other words, even if he's kosher, as that's the element of this second pshat, even if he's a kosher kohen gadol, nevertheless, there is a tendency that if things are going easy and too comfortable, a person can get a feeling of haughtiness. So that to avoid that, we make him scamper about as we would if the sleeping chamber was in the north. De'i lo yitema hachi, if you don't subscribe to this idea, then in other words, if you don't accept the benefit of having this tircha, in other words, that the tircha is in fact advantageous, well then navdinu l'travayu b'hadi adodi. Why not have both lishachos, the lishkas perhedrin and the lishkas beis avtinas, right next to each other? Inami tiski le b'chada, or it should have been enough to have just one chamber in which he would sleep and also do the chafina. So from the fact that we have two chambers to begin with already indicates that we're two chambers that are at different sides of the Azara. It already shows us that we are interested in achieving some level of tircha, and if we can increase that by having the sleeping chamber on the north, so be it. That would actually be to our advantage. And as with that in mind, then we've rejected what Rav Papa tried to say when he started the long point that we have, where he said umistabra, that the Parhedrin was in the south. We're saying now, no, it's not so mistabra. It's not necessarily logical to assume that the Parhedrin was in fact in the south. Continuing in the Gemara with a quote from the Mishnah, the Amru Lo Ishi Kohen Gadol, where Ishi is a title of distinction, like Mr. Kohen Gadol, and they said, Onu Shluchei Beisin V'ata Shlucheinu, we are the agents of the court, and you are our agent. And they made him swear that he would be a Kohen Gadol of high repute and not practice the ways of the heretics. In this comment made by the Mishnah that you are our emissary, so Lema, now we have a long question. Before we continue in the Gemara, we also have a topic heading where we've noted Pirush Atosh Lucheinu de Masnisen. The Mishnah said, you are our agent. Atosh Lucha, you are our agent. So the Gemara here will deal with a topic of agency, of frichus. There are two approaches to how to view Kohanim. And one calls Kohanim Shluchei de Rachmona, the other refers to the Kohanim as Shluchei Didon. Shluchei de Rachmona would mean they're emissaries of the Almighty. The other approach says that the Kohanim are our emissaries. That's just by way of background. Now, the Gemara. Lema teve tufta de Rav Una Breder of Yeshua. Shall we say that our Mishnah that says you, the Kohen Gadol, are our emissary is a refutation to Rav Huna's approach? The Amar Rav Huna, Brei Rav Yeshua, Hanikani Shluchei de Rachmona Ninu. He categorizes Kohanim as the Almighty's emissaries, not as our emissaries. The Amar Shluchei de Don Ninu. If you were to say that the Kohanim are our emissaries, Mi Iko Midi Danan Lo Matzinu Lemevad Shluchei de Don Matzu Avdi. We're at the top of Omid Beis. Let's read that line again. Mi Iko Midi. Is there anything? The Anan, that we, called the owner, or the one who is sending the agent, the originator, where the origin of the agency, we, lo matzina mevad, we cannot do. In other words, if you're not a Kohen, a non-Kohen cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So, could it be that the Kohen is my shaliach? If I were not a Kohen and I'm appointing, and a Kohen is going to be serving, is going to be offering my sacrifices, how can I term him my agent? I can't offer the sacrifices. How can an agent do something that the originator himself could not do? Therefore, to call a Kohen my agent would not be accurate. Hence, Rav Huna feels that the more correct and the proper classification of a Kohen is as the agent of the Almighty. That's what the Gemara is saying. We'll read that line again. Mi komidi danan lo motzinam evad. Is there anything that I cannot do? Shluchi didon motzu avdi, and my emissary, my agent, could do. So that's at this point. Then our Mishnah though says that the Kohen Gadol is our agent. So this would appear to be a refutation of Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua. The Gemara says, no, don't look at the Mishnah as a refutation of his approach. Hachi ko'amri lei. This is really what they were saying to the Kohen Gadol. Mashbim ano alecho al datenu v'al das beisdin. We are binding you by oath according to our understanding of the halacha and according to the mindset of the court. So that their comment of ata shluchenu, you are our agent, doesn't mean that you are our agent with regard to service, but you are our agent with regard to accepting the oath according to our mindset. In other words, when you are swearing allegiance to doing the avodas beis hamikdash according to the halacha, it doesn't mean according to the way you, Mr. Kohen Gadol, perceive halacha, but rather you're swearing allegiance to the way we, the Beis Din, perceives halacha. So ata shluchenu means, once again, you are our agent or emissary with regard to accepting the oath according to our mindset and not according to the way you might otherwise interpret things. We continue. The Mishnah mentioned who porish uboche vein porish ubochen. The Kohen Gadol and the court, they split from one another, each one crying. Who porish uboche? He, the Kohen Gadol, separates from them, departs from them, and is crying. Shechosdu tzeduki. Well, they made him swear allegiance, meaning that in the back of their minds, maybe he's a heretic. So he felt very slighted or offended by having been suspected as a tzeduki, as a heretic. Vein porshinu bochen, and they are very upset as well. The Yom Rav Yeshua ben Levi, call hachoshid b'ksherim, anyone who casts suspicions upon those that are really kosher, that are innocent and valid and qualified people, and you nevertheless suspect them, loike begufo, is subject to one who does suspect the kosher, so he is subjecting himself to personal injury. The cholkach loma. Why was it necessary? Why did they impose the shvua? What was the whole reason for this? We mentioned what's the basis of this suspicion all of a sudden of suspecting him of being a tzeduki? The answer is shelo yitakein mibachutz v'yachnis kederos hatzedukim oisim. What could happen, and this is what they were suspicious of, is that he might be a tzeduki, and their practice, these tzedukim were people that did not accept the Torah shebal peh. So according to their reading of the Torah, they felt that the way to do the incense ceremony on Yom Kippur, which we're talking about not the daily incense, but the incense that was brought on Yom Kippur into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, into the inner sanctum where the Holy Ark containing the Ten Commandments were located. What did they do? So they would put the incense on the coals while in the Heichal, and the coals would be burning, creating the smoke of the incense before the Kohen Gadol would get into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, into the inner sanctum. We don't accept that. We are of the opinion, meaning we, those who observe tradition and the oral law, understand that the coals were brought into the Heichal along with the incense, but in separate pans. And only once the Kohen Gadol was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies, only then would the incense be put onto the burning coals. And only in the Kodesh HaKodoshim would the incense start to smoke. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a Tanaic source that elaborates on this topic. And on the side of the Gemara, we should have mentioned maybe a moment earlier, we have a topic heading where we deal with what we've mentioned already, number one, Mashbiyonoi Soshilesa Kitzedukin, that we bind him by oath that he shouldn't practice the way of the heretics, which had their own method, as we described. And number two, Umaisa Bitzedukiechad, a story involving a heretic that actually slipped in. He got in under the radar. So here is the story. Tanu Rabbanan, Maisa B'Tzeduki Echad. There was an incident involving a heretic. Shehiskin mibachutz v'ichnas. He prepared the incense. Mibachutz means while still in the hechal, before getting into the holy of holies, the hichnas, and brought the smoking incense, already smoking incense, into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. B'Yitziyasa Sameach Simcha Gedola. Upon exiting from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he exited in great joy. he got away with it, so to speak. Pogabo Oviv, the father of this heretic, met his son. Omar lo Bani, he says, son, afalpi shetzedukim, even though we are tzedukim, we are heretics, misyorin anu minaprushim, we are afraid of the traditionalists. The Prushim are the ones who observe the tradition. Omar lo, so the son says to his father, Kol yomai hoyisi mitzta'ar l'amikra hazeh, all my days, all my life, I was concerned with the Pasuk. And again, the Tzedukim, they claim to be adherents of the written law. Well, what does it say? It says, Ki be'anon eiro'e al hakapores. Well, here, if you take things in a somewhat literal fashion, Be'anon was a reference to the smoking incense. I will, with the smoking incense, then I will appear. Ala Kaporis is a reference to the Oron, which is in the Holy of Holies. Amarti Mosai Yovoi Liyodi Vaikaimenu. I was wondering, when am I going to have a chance to do it our way? Achshav Shebo Liyodi Lo Akaimenu. Now that it's come my way, I shouldn't do it. So he was, this Tzeduki son was overjoyed with his ability to have gotten away with it, preparing the Keturas in their fashion. Amru, it is then told, Lo hoyu yomim mu'otim ad shemeis v'hutal ba'ashpa v'yotayloyin yoytzim echoytmoy. Not much time passed until he died and was his corpse was cast into the pile of garbage, and there were worms exiting his nose. Rashi explains why the nose, and that's because it's the first appendage or the first limb to enter the place that he shouldn't have entered. And as he improperly entered the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so it's the first one to have, let's say, sinned as far as his limbs, hence it's the one that is punished. The Yesh Oimrim B'Yitziyoso Nigath. Another approach to what happened to this Tzeduki is that upon exit he was smitten. Deltoni Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya has a teaching, Kamin Koil Nishma Bazora, was a sound heard in the temple courtyard. This incident, of course, is taking place within the enclosed area of the Heichal and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So people who were standing outside in the Azora, and there are also actually rules concerning the presence of anyone else on Yom Kippur in the Heichal when this ceremony is taking place. No one was there. They had to be in the Azora. But nevertheless, a noise was heard by those standing in the Azora. Shebo Malach v'choftoi alponov, an angel came and hit him on his face. V'nichnasu echov v'kodim motzu, and the brethren Koyanim went in and they found him. Kekaf regel egel bein seifov. There appeared to be a footprint of a calf between his shoulders. And they, that footprint that was embedded in his body was the mark of an angel. And here is a pasuk that points that out. V'ragleim regel yishara. This is a pasuk referring to angels. It says that they have a singular straight leg. V'kaf ragleim kekaf regel egel. And the base of their feet is reminiscent or similar to the foot of a calf. Basically, would look like a split hoof, I suppose. So that's the mark that they found on this Tzeduki Kohen upon his exit from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Omar Rav Zecharia ben Kavutal. The Mishnah mentioned that he was involved in keeping the Kohen Gadol awake at night, and here the Gemara will be focusing on his name. So Masni le Rav Chonon bar Rava lechio bar Rav kame de Rav. So you have Rav Chonon teaching the son of Rav in Rav's presence. And what is Rav Chonon saying? He's teaching the chio. What is he saying? He's teaching the Rav's son Mishnayos, and he says he's quoting our Mishnah, but he pronounces the word differently than we have. Omar Rav Zecharia ben Kaputol. And Rav made a hand motion indicating that you should pronounce it Kavutal. So Rav was interested in accuracy, so he says you should pronounce the name with a beis and not with a pei. Before we go on in the Gemara, we should glance at our topic heading. This section of Gemara will deal Behilchus Kriyashma. Rules concerning Kriyat Shema, you're probably wondering where do you see anything about Kriyat Shema? Just wait, you'll see in the Gemara, but this is an introduction. Hilchos Kriyat Shema, number one, Lo Yirmoiz Be'enov, Bizman Shekori Kriyat Shema. No motions should be, not even any eye motions should be made, winking motions, that type of eye motioning should not be done while you are saying Kriyat Shema. And number two, we will see later, Droshos Ala Posuk V'Dibarto Bom. A pasuk in the Kriyat Shema. So the Gemara asks right now, why did, and notice we dashed the line the word umachvile. Machvile has to do with a motion as opposed to speech. V'neimole meimar, the Gemara asks, why not say straight out? Why did Rav have to machvile? Why did he make this motion? Just say kavutol instead of kaputol. The Gemara answers, Kriyat Shema Havakori. He was in the middle of reciting Kriyat Shema. So he was saying Kriyat Shema, and this fellow was teaching his son the incorrect name. The Gemara asks, now this question lasts a number of lines. Oh, you're telling me he was in the middle of Kriyat Shema? And what did Rav do? He did he motioned the Chihai Gavna Mishori, and is this way allowed? The Omer of Yitzchok Bar Shmuel Bar Marta. Hakorei Eshma. So Rav Yitzchok teaches us that one who is reciting Shema, Lo Yirmoz Be'enov, Velo Yikrotz Besvosa, Besifsoisov, Velo Yoreb Esvosov. All kinds of motions he shouldn't make. Yirmoz is to hint or motion with his eyes, nor Yikrotz Besvosov has some type of a lip motion, or Yoreb Esvosov, point out things with your finger. Interesting, you have different verbs for each different limb. Nice level of detail in the Hebrew language. V'tanya, Reb Elozer Chasma Omer, Hakori Eshma, Umerabe, Umerameiz Beinov, Umekareitz Besif Soisov, Umare Be'ezbo. One who, while he is reciting Kriyat Shema, does any of these motions, Olov HaKosov Omer, regarding him, the Pasuk says, V'lo Osi Korosa Yankiv, and the Pasuk has a negative connotation, indicating that that's not the way to accept the yoke of heaven, which is accomplished when one is reciting Kriyat Shema. The question remains, how could, if it's so that Rav made his motion while he was doing Kriyat Shema, is he not practicing something that's incorrect? Lo kashya, no, there's no question here. Ha b'perek rishon, ha b'perek sheni. The halacha of motion restriction is true if you're engaged in the first paragraph of the Kriyat Shema. The Kriyat Shema is made of three paragraphs. In the first paragraph, the pasuk says, "V'hoyu hadvorim ha'ela al levovecha," and that from that pasuk we learn that you need to have special intent and concentration while reciting the first paragraph of Kriya Shema. The Gemara in Brachas gets into detail exactly how much needs Kavana, but for our purposes, the first parak needs that level of concentration, precluding motioning. But in the second parak, then this restriction doesn't apply. Tanu Rabbanan, having make mention of Kriya Shema, we have further drushes. V'dibarta bom. Bom v'lo b'tfila. That means that in the recitation of Kriya Shema, you should say it in an audible fashion. Rashi says, bom shiyesh l'cha rishus lahashmiya. The Bach adds the word rishus. When it comes to Kriya Shema, you have permission lahashmiya ma sha'ata moitzi mipicha to recite it in an audible fashion. V'lo b'tfila, Rashi says, sh'atfila b'lachash. Tfila must be in silence. There is lip movement for sure, but non-audible prayer. Sh'nemar v'kola lo yishoma. So the first Rasha is saying that audible speech is mutter in the recitation of Kriya Shema, but not v'lo b'tfila. Another drosha, another expansion of this expression, v'dibarta bom yesh lecha rishus ledaber v'lo bedvarim achirim. In matters of Kriya Shema, or more accurately, bedivrei Torah, you can speak, but not in other matters. We're going to see more about this in a few lines of the Gemara. So for the time being, the Torah gives us permission to speak in Torah, but not in other matters. Rav Acha Omer v'dibarta bom, asei oisan kva v'al ta'asem aroi. The study of Torah should be your keva, your fixed, your constant, regular preoccupation, and not treat Torah as something aroi. Aroi is something that's transient, something that's passing. Omar Rava, asof sichas chulin oiver ba'asein. We've double underlined the types of offenses that one is guilty of if he is engaged in idle talk. You see asay, and the next line alav, a negative command. So Rava says one who speaks sichas chulin will translate that right now as idle talk. So he's oiver basay, he's in violation of a positive command. Shenema v'dibarta bom v'lo b'dvar machirim. Here is what we mentioned before, that the pasuk excludes other kinds of speech. Rashi, though, here is much clearer. V'lo b'dvar machirim sichas hayalodim v'kalas roish. In other words, if you're asking directions how to get to a gas station, that's not a problem. That's not what's being restricted here. But sichas hayalodim, childish talk, or levity kalas roish, that is what we are against. Rav Acho bar Yankev Omer over belav, one who is engaged in these things, these dvorim achirim, is in violation of a negative command as well. Shenemar, the pasuk cited here is not from the Torah; it's from the book of Kehelis, but nevertheless, Rav Acho says this is a form of a negative command. It says, Shenemar kol hadvorim yigeim lo yuchal ish ledaber, all the weary talk. And a reference to what we mentioned before, lo yuchal, a person is not allowed to speak. Continuing with the Mishnah, bikesh lehisnamnim. The Kohen Gadol is, we already learned that on the night of Yom Kippur, we want him to stay awake. We don't want him to fall asleep, because sleep is associated with the fear of becoming tomei through an emission, a male emission. So if it is, it seems like he is dozing off. That's bikesh lisnanim pirche kahuna makin lefonov beetzba tsreda. The pirche kahuna, the young kohanim, make a type of clicking noise using their fingers. So Rashi explains the Gemara will explain what that is, but the Gemara with the Rashi later will try to explain that. But there's a noise that they make using their finger. The Omrim Lo, and they say Ishi Kohen Gadol, Mr. Kohen Gadol, Amod V'Hofeg Achas Al Haritzpa. Rashi says V'Hofeg Tiel, to walk around on the floor, lahafik shino meinecha, to rid yourself of the weariness from your eyes. Amod vaveg achas schok lano pam achas ala ritzpa. Do something amusing, that's a literal translation, but do something entertaining for us on the floor. Lahafik shino schok gmar forish mahi. The Gemara will explain what this act of entertainment would be. The Mishnah continues, "Umasika noisa ad shiagia zman hashita," and we try to preoccupy him with these activities until the time for slaughtering the morning daily sacrifice arrives, which is, as Rashi says, it's beheir hamizrach. That's basically at the time that we would associate with dawn. My tsreda, the Gemara asks. The Mishnah made reference to the etzba tsreda. What does that mean? Omar Rav Yehuda, tsarasa deda. A tsara in other areas of learning has to do with a co-wife. Here we're going to say it's a co-finger. When we say a co-finger, it means it's the finger next to the thumb. My he, what's the main finger that this is next to? Gudal, the thumb. So it's tsaras de da, it's the tsara, it's the co-finger of this one. And the Gemara says, so what is this one? My he? Gudal, the thumb. So we're describing a situation of two fingers, and we haven't yet fully described the noise. Machvi Rav Huna v'ozal kola b'kulei v'rav. Rav Huna demonstrated what the Mishnah is describing. Rav Huna lived in Bavel, and he made this noise, and they heard it in the entire yeshiva. So it was a loud noise that he was able to create using his fingers. Now Rashi explains, Sarasa deda, Sarasa shel zu, etzpa shehit sara lezu. It's the co-finger of this one, umayhi zu gudal. Be'etzpa hasmucha legudal, with the finger next to the thumb, the sometimes referred to possibly as the index finger, the second finger, the finger right next to the thumb, hoya mechabroi lagudal, mechabroi is to attach it, so he would have the tip of his index finger clenching the tip of his thumb, bechozka. In other words, he would attach his two fingers together tightly, and then veshonta, and then flick his finger outwards, umake al kapoy. And it seems to me that he would have his other hand positioned opposite this index finger that's flicking, and he would in effect hit the inside, the palm of his hand, the nishma akol, and that impact, that flicking noise in of his finger onto the palm of his hand would create this noise. Years ago, I thought that it has to do with what we call snapping one's fingers, but I don't think that one can do an effective snapping of one's fingers using the index finger and the thumb. Whereas that second finger and the thumb would more likely make the noise the way we explained it now, using it to hit the palm of his other hand. The Gemara continues. V'omrim lo ishi kohen gadol hofek achas al aritzba v'chulei. Omar Rav Yitzchok al chodos. Rashi says al chodos derech chidush her'olonu. He shows us something new or unique. Amri le. Achvi kido, what they would do, the Gemara asks, Maihi, what is this? At the beginning of the line, Maihi, what is this unique thing that they want him to demonstrate? They want the Kohen Gadol to demonstrate? So they would tell him, Amri Leh, they would tell the Kohen Gadol, who was, we just saw a moment ago, was experiencing fatigue. They'd say to him, Achvi kido, demonstrate kido. Now Rashi explains what that is. Rashi says, Noyetz Gudlov Boretz, he would wedge his thumbs into the ground. It appears it was some type of push-up, but the push-up he would be doing is not just placing his hands on the ground, which many of us are familiar with when doing push-ups, but he would use his thumbs to support himself, and then after demonstrating this push-up, he would then stand. That is explained in Maseches Sukkah. The Gemara continues. Umasikano isa shiagiz man shchita. Tana loho umasikano soy lo benevel lo vikino elo bepe. They didn't preoccupy him using nevel and vikino, different types of musical instruments, but rather bepe means they would sing to him. Uma hoyu oimrim, and what was the text of their song? Im Hashem lo yivne bayis. Shav omlu boinov bo. If Hashem doesn't build the house, if Hashem doesn't take care, then for naught are there all those that work in it. Now, but Rashi has a different take on this. Im Hashem lo yivne bayis, Rashi explains at the end of the narrow lines, klomar. Here, klomar indicates something beyond the translation. We, in explaining it, presented a translation. But here he says, Klomar, he zoyer bavoidoscha, be careful in your service, shetei l'shem shamayim, that it should be with a pure intention, shetei l'ratzois, for the purpose of creating a bond between the Jewish people and the Almighty. L'ratzois literally is to appease the Almighty. Shem eino ritzuya, ein torchacho oylo l'klum. If your actions are lacking this purity, and it's not desirable, not desired by the Almighty, then all your efforts are not worth anything. Rashi goes on, Shav omlu boinov boi, bechinom yigeim bebinyin shelo yiskayim. For naught they are exerting efforts in the structure that will not last. So we continue in our Gemara. Mikire Yerushalayim, from the important citizens of Jerusalem, they participated in these efforts to keep the Kohen Gadol awake at night. So Lohoyu Yeshenim Kol Halaylo, they volunteered. These are important officials of Jerusalem. They volunteered that themselves would not go to sleep, so that he should hear them, but I have a group of people that are awake at night, so you hear them. Maybe they're milling around, maybe they're talking, whatever the case is, these people that stay awake at night will be heard by the Kohen Gadol, and he will not be overtaken by sleep. So you see from this a description of a person who may be fatigued, but he hears noises that can interrupt his sleep. And here, this will keep him awake. Tanya, Abba Shol, Omer, Af Bigvulin, Hoyu Osin Kain, Zecher LeMikdash, Elosha, Hoyu Choytin. Abba Shol says that even Bigvulin means outside the Beis HaMikdash. And the term Zecher LeMikdash indicates to me that at the time after the destruction of the temple, there were those that practiced staying up all night as a commemoration of what took place in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, but it led to sin. Amar Abai Vitamer of Nahbar Yitzhak, Tirguma, Nahar De'ah. The reference in this source of Begvulin, we said outside the Beis HaMikdash, so Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, he Tirguma means explains that the Gvulin is Nahar De'ah, a city in Babylonia. The Yomerle, Elio, the Rav Yehuda, Achva, the Rav Salah Hasida. Elio Hanavi, look at this, how outstanding these people were, that the hero of Yehuda, the brother of Rav Salah Hasida, had communication with Elio, and Elio says to him, Amrisu, you say, Amaylo Osi Mashiach. You always complain, where's the Mashiach? Why hasn't he come yet? Elio continues, he says, well, Id the Yom Kippur, right now it's Yom Kippur. The Ival Kama Besulta Benaharda. Now Yom Kippur, let it be known, is a day in which intimacy between husband and wife is strictly forbidden. This line is describing something that would appear to be far worse than that, that you have immorality taking place on that, you know, Yom Kippur night. They were staying up all night and involved men and women intermingling, leading to this type of immorality in the Harda. Omar lo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, my Omar. So Rabbi Yehuda asks Elio Hanavi, what does God say about this? Omar le, Elio answers, and we continue at the top of Daf Chof, LePesach Chatos Roveitz, that the sin lies at the threshold. Now, Rashi says something here that is amazing, but in the context of our Daf Yomi Shir, we can only present the amazing element, but as far as explaining it further, that you have to do further research. Rashi says, Ha-yetzahara machti'oi bal korcho. Very hard line, very difficult concept that Rashi is saying here, but it seems on a first glance is a very benevolent comment on the part of the Almighty. He says, listen, you know, the evil inclination is causing him to sin against his will, Baal Korchoi. Again, that line needs further clarification. The Rav Yehuda asks Elio for Satan, my Omar, and what does the Satan say? Omar le, the Elio Novi answers, today is Yom Kippur. Satan b'Yom Kippur les le reshus l'istuni. The Satan on Yom Kippur has no reshus, he has no permission to serve as a condemner. Mimai, and how do you know that? That on somehow he, that the Satan's day off is Yom Kippur. How do you know that? Alma Rami Barchama, Ha Satan, the gematria, the numerical value of that word, Tlas Mea Vishisin Varba Havi. It equals 364. If you add up the numbers, Hey is 5, the Shin represents 300, that's 305, and you have the Tess is 9, so 305 and 9 is 314, and Nun is 50, that's 364. So the numerical value of the word Hasatan is 364, and this corresponds to Tlas Mea Vishisin V'Arba Yoyim Islei Rishus L'Stunei. He has the right to prosecute, to serve as a condemner over 364 days of the year. B'Yom Kippuri, less labor Rishus L'Stunei, but on Yom Kippur, he does not have that right. So he might see what's going on, but he cannot use this in his litany of protests against the Jewish people. Parenthetically, there's something that's very interesting over here, and we're not going to get into the explanations there. One can come up with an interesting explanation, but the number 364 or 365 is a number associated with the solar calendar. The Jewish year, what we call the Jewish calendar, is based on, let's say, lunar sightings. However, not exclusively. That might be something that the Muslims follow. But the the pure solar calendar is something that we generally don't associate with halacha. It's hard to say exactly how many days exist in a standard Jewish year, but at the average is 354, because you're taking 6 months times 29 days and 6 months times 30 days. On a leap year, you will be adding a second Adar, a 29-day month, so you're going from 354 days to 383 days. Nevertheless, you don't see a Jewish calendar having 365 days. And here we're saying this, we're almost creating the impression here that Yom Kippur comes out once every 365 days. Technically speaking, in Arzal, you'll never find that case that it comes out once every 365 days. It'll come out once every 354 days, or if it's a leap year, over the course of 383 days. But what might be the explanation is that the average is 365, because the lunar calendar is set up in such a way that it coincides with the solar calendar. The lunar calendar being the basis of the when we celebrate the holidays, but there has to be a correlation between that and the seasons of the year. Called Chodesh Ha'aviv, for example, which is the time Pesach comes out, and seasons are a solar based phenomenon. For more information on this, one can refer to the early part of Maseches Sanhedrin, where that's described much greater length. The point that we want to make here in our Gemara markings Daf Yomi Shir is that when we make reference to a what sometimes people call it the secular year, or what have you, having in mind the January through December. So names of months aside for right now, that period of time is a 365 day year. And you can see that to call that a secular calendar or a secular year is a bit of a misnomer. If you refer to the months, January, February, etc., as secular months, so be it. But to regard the cycle of 365 days as something that's of a secular, non-Torah, non-Jewish nature, that is far, far from the reality. So that's something to think about in regarding other matters as well. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you're interested in being in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.